Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Put a spring in your step and fresh looks in your home, in store or online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And as we speak, the state car and its Garda escort, the Outriders, is just departing Leinster House, just gone past the Shelbourne Hotel, and will make its way to Áras an Uachtaráin, where Simon Harris will receive his seal of office and formally become Taoiseach. And he's, I don't know what route they're taking, they've gone back up around Stephen's Green. I presume with the Dublin traffic, Simon should be in Áras an Uachtaráin just in time for the next general election. But he does have a Garda escort, and we will keep you in touch on this historic day. The scene as he left Leinster House 4 or 5 minutes ago was reminiscent of his wedding in 2017. All the great and the good from Fine Gael, looking absolutely fantastic and radiant on a beautiful spring afternoon. They gave him a standing ovation as he left the Dáil Éireann, and indeed as he headed towards the plinth and indeed his car to Áras an Uachtaráin. So a guard of honour in one sense on this historic day for our new Taoiseach, the youngest ever Taoiseach, as he's been introduced continually on BBC radio and television, and above all when he becomes Taoiseach in about 20 minutes time. Good health and happiness to him and his family. Who he spoke so warmly about, not just Kiva, obviously, his wife and mother of the two children, but also Bart. Bart and Mary, his parents, who, as someone pointed out earlier, it was Heather Humphreys, who said that he should listen especially, I know he listened to his mother, he's described her, she was a senior special needs assistant and a very, very accomplished woman. But he said that she had her own freeze. The deputy leader of Fine Gael, not the Taoiseach, but the deputy leader of Fine Gael, said that he should listen to his father, especially because his father is a taxi driver. And she was making the point that sometimes taxi drivers prove that travel, my words, not hers, and don't want her to be taking responsibility for them, taxi drivers prove that travel does broaden the mind. And they are, that's where he gets his advice from, Bart and Mary. And indeed, he mentioned his nana, which I think is the first time a Taoiseach. Well, maybe Leo mentioned his granny in Dungarvan, but I think it's the first time that the nana has actually been in the Distinguished Visitors Gallery for the election of Taoiseach. We'll keep you up to speed. Okay, let's go back to Dublin Airport. You heard that story yesterday. You'll read about it today in The Independent and The Herald. Réalteán Ní Leanán, the well-known poet, going through Dublin Airport recently. We don't know the exact reason. Was it the new machines, or was it just new staff or whatever? But she was stopped when she went through the body scanner, not the bag scanner, obviously the body scanner. It went off and she was taken aside and she was patted down by obviously a female operative. And the female operative discovered something she thought warranted further inquiry, and she asked her to reveal it. And it turned out to be much too, because Réalteán explained to us, yes, she did say to her it was a breast prosthetic. And the word breast was used, but she was patted down and asked to reveal it in full view of the security positions at Dublin Airport, which, as you know, always have a lot of people standing and a lot of harassed people as well, given out about whoever forgot to take whatever they did out of their bag and phone. So she was very embarrassed. And as she explained afterwards, when she was on the plane, she started crying because she only then did the trauma of it kick in and what it brought back. Mary, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
What happened and when?
Well, I was heading off on the 8th of March, okay, on a summer vacation.
Okay.
My sons had insisted that I take a couple of weeks out following a double mastectomy, okay, in December and January this year. And I was going through the checkout in Dublin Airport, To find that, my hip, I have a replacement hip and a replacement knee, and they both generally bip. So I sort of said, you know, I've got a replacement hip and knee. And then she went up to my chest, and they were both bipping. Mm-hmm. And then the penny dropped with me that I have, because I had a double mastectomy, I have these magnets which my surgeon puts fluid into to expand the tissue. They're called tissue expanders, to form new breasts. And both those magnets were going off, so I kind of got embarrassed. And I said, I've had a double mastectomy. I sort of said it quietly. And she goes, I will have to pat you down. And she starts feeling under my breast, the side of my breast. And I turn around and I think, gosh, she probably didn't hear me. I said it slightly louder because I was quite embarrassed. There's a little body dysmorphia, I suppose, after a double mastectomy. So you'd be a bit sensitive. And because I'd had cancer many years ago, you know, I sort of took it in my stride and I sort of said, I've had a double mastectomy.
Okay.
And these are magnets. And she sort of kept patting me down. She said, I know, in a sort of a very dismissive kind of fashion. And I kind of thought, gosh, this is very strange. I don't understand this, you know, and because I'd never gone through with these new expanders through security before, this was all very new to me. But I felt that I had been treated in a very almost dismissive fashion, you know, because I was trying to be saying, you know, these are implants. And she dismissed me and then, you know, said, I know what you're talking about. Or just she said, I know is what she said. And then she sort of waved me on and I kind of walked on and I quite, to be honest, after the interaction. And I was kind of really kind of shaking, really. And I started putting all my bits and my electrics back in my bag and my hand luggage. And I went off and I sat down and I thought, what just happened?
Yeah.
And Joe, it was, I felt, oh, I don't mean to be mean here, manhandled, if you like, you know, because I was womanhandled, but I felt there was a lack of empathy, a lack of understanding, you know, of what I'd said to her quietly, discreetly, and had to repeat out loud amongst, as you said earlier, a huge amount of people that stream past, you know, the security check. And you're also cognizant that you don't want to hold things up. And you feel that when you're going through. You want to try and be efficient and process as quickly as possible and, you know, make sure you've no fluids and things. And, you know, I didn't realise that my magnets would let the thing go off.
And how did it finish, Mary? Or has it finished as far as you're concerned?
Yeah, I mean, I suppose, you know, how did it finish? I thought about it after the interaction, and I felt very tousled, if you like, in myself, you know, discombobulated, if you like, because it was just so very odd. And I thought to myself, and I set it aside and I left it away and I went off on my holidays and, you know, recuperated and recovered and did a bit of cycling and swimming and felt much better in myself. And when I came back, and then yesterday I was, you know, I'd forgotten about it, Joe. And yesterday I turned the radio on when I was on my lunch break and I heard this lady and I thought, oh my God, that's so like what happened to me. And I thought, well, what if this is happening to other people? So with that, I wrote an email to DNA. Now, I haven't had a response. And I said, look, you know, this happened to me. And it wasn't very empathetic. Perhaps the staff need training. You know, I don't know what they need to do to resolve this or, you know, whether other women have had this challenge.
Okay.
But it was quite shocking, Joe, really.
And say what is Mary, and it obviously was. Martine Brangan. Martine, good afternoon.
Hi, Joe. Yes, I was listening to the lady yesterday who had had to show her breast implant. What happened to me sometime last year, I travel quite a lot, so I can't remember exactly when it was, but I have several factors. I have MS, so I'm very wobbly to start with, and use the wheelchair assistance through the airport. Invariably, my left knee goes off because I had it replaced, so it immediately creates an alert. I always end up having a body search. Now, one of the times I had the body search, I always have to explain to the people, and I understand they have to search, and it's all for our own good, my good, all passengers' good. But I have an ileostomy. That's where the small bowel is brought to the surface of the tummy and discharges into a bag.
Okay.
Now, it's fair enough. I explain, and most of the world where I go, the security people nod me on and say, that's fine. They feel it, and that's fine.
Okay.
But the lady in Dublin Airport asked me to expose it.
Oh.
And when I pulled down my leggings, actually she pulled down my leggings, exposed a bag full of fecal material, and she got the fright of her life, because obviously she had never seen such before. And another time I went through Dublin Airport, I explained, I have an ileostomy bag, and she says, what's that? I said, a stoma. I have a stoma. She says, what's a stoma? She had never heard of anyone. She says, I never heard such surgery in my life. Now, it's the training in the airport is what it puts at fault. Also, bringing people, doing examinations, personal examinations like that in the public isn't on. When I go through the Middle Eastern airports, there's never a problem. They always bring you to a cubicle where a lady examines you in private and quickly nods you on. They're trained and know what they're dealing with. But that's my experience.
Okay.
Really is that they're
there,
not trained.
Okay, stay there, Martine. And Pat Coughlin has been on to us as well. Pat, what happened in your case?
Hello, Joe. First of all, my sympathy go to the last two speakers and the previous one yesterday. I think on a scale of 1 to 10, theirs are a 10. I think mine probably would be a bit lower, but nevertheless, it's a concern to me. A couple of times I've had to go through Dublin Airport and come back as well, and only Dublin Airport is where this happens. I have a knee replacement, and my left knee will go off. And I bring the doctor's letters to the airport with me to say I've had this and that it will go off.
Okay.
The staff are not in the slightest bit interested. They don't want to see them. They don't want to know anything about it. All they are concerned about is that it will go off. And when it goes off, you're immediately in to everything from a pat-down to a strip search. Effectively, although that has never happened to me, but effectively you're into that range of investigation. And it's pretty disconcerting for me. At one occasion going through, it had a terrific effect upon myself and my wife, because they brought me over, I was spread-eagled, I was patted down, they had electronic devices, obviously measuring aspects of my body. All of the time I'm panicking, because my wife is on the other side and she's panicking. And I'm also concerned that my bags, my key, my passport, my wallet have gone down a separate line there,
out of sight
in the public area.
Yes, yes.
And can be picked up by anybody. So it is a horrendous experience. And it's all down to just one thing. They're not trained to recognise people who have metal parts put into their body, to recognise them and to deal with them. Other airports are. You understand that? And they leave you pass by.
Okay, I'll bring in Graeme McQueen, who's a media relations manager at Dublin Airport Authority. Graeme, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
What's going on?
Look, it's very disappointing to hear those stories, Joe. I'd like to apologise to Relta, Mary, Martine and Pat that they did have those experiences at Dublin Airport. It's not good enough. I think we hold our hands up and say that is very much the case. We want to learn from situations like this to make sure that we can avoid things like this happening in the future. I think we want Dublin Airport to be a welcoming, enjoyable place. We know travelling can be stressful at the best of times. We want to take these pain points away for people. So we hold our hands up. We obviously didn't get it right on these occasions. And we want to learn from this to make sure that we can make it better in the future.
There seems to be a consistency in the complaints about the attitude of obviously some staff. Empathy was a word that's been used again and again. What is the training? Do stoma bags and various other prosthesis that we heard of and knee replacements, are they included in the training modules?
Yeah, they would be, Joe. And look, I'd make the point that training is ongoing. Training never starts and stops. It continues all the time. So individuals will constantly be given reminders on certain things. They'll be upskilled in certain areas. I would make the point that we have a large staff. We have about 900 staff on the security operations. So that's sizable. A lot of those staff would be fairly new. And it is a very complex job. You know, we deal with people, 32 million people a year go through the airport, around 16 million of those go through security. So we deal with people from all walks of life with all sorts of ailments, hidden disabilities. Some are more obvious. So the training is ongoing. They learn on a daily basis. So look, on these occasions, we got it wrong. This isn't me making excuses. These people are learning a lot of the time. They're in the job a number of months, a small number of years in some cases. So we take all this back in, and we will absolutely be making sure that these issues that have been brought up in the last couple of days are dealt with.
Pat Coughlan, do you want to put anything to Graham from Dublin Airport Authority?
Well, I do, because I don't believe a word of what he said. At least in my circumstances, perhaps in other circumstances, he's perfectly correct in what he's saying. But in my circumstances, after I had gone through the experience once, I had made a complaint to the DAA and I got a response back which was very similar to what Graham has just said there now. And the next time it happened, I actually phoned and I was in a panic and I told them this. And they did reply to me by email and they said, and I see the words here in front of me which are most important, they said, every time you go through Dublin Airport, you will experience this. And that's coming from customer service.
So, well, Graham, do you want to respond to that? There's, even with improvements in security, there's no relaxation for people who are in these situations, it seems.
Look, there are very strict rules on around security at airports. That's something we've got to deal with. That doesn't that's not an excuse for empathy not being displayed in these situations. So I think we can expect the likes of Pat to maybe have to do certain things each time he comes through. But the way we approach that, the way we speak to him, the way we alert him to the fact that he may need to do something that other passengers may not need to do, that's something we can absolutely look at. But look, the staff, the aim is that they be trained to deal with every circumstance. And on some occasions here, it's shown, I think, that they do need to upskill in certain areas, and that's something that we'll absolutely take on board.
Are you willing to take on board training of your staff to accept documents handed to them by consultants to explain why the alerters may go off? Because they don't want to hear them. They don't want to know about them.
What is the protocol there, Graham?
Well, look, I think when a passenger makes one of our members of staff aware of an issue, they need to be able to deal with that and handle it in a certain way. As I say, it could be a knee replacement, it could be a stoma bag, it could be anything in between that. So we deal with every walk of life comes through Dublin Airport, and we've got to be able to deal with that. So I don't have specifics about every single issue. I think it's unreasonable to expect.
But what is it? Hang on a minute, Graham. Stoma bags, prostheses, knee replacements. These we all know about them in either through people we know or reading about them. What is the instruction given to your 900 staff? I don't know. Do you have a weekly bulletin? How do you communicate with so many people, different rosters? What is the instruction given to them when somebody comes up with, like Pat Coughlan did, with a letter from a consultant, obviously on letterheading? Is there instruction to believe that letter or to question that letter?
Well, the staff member would always take security first. It's all about keeping people safe. So however they determine, however they can make sure that passenger is safe to progress to the flight, they will make that decision. So the letter may form part of that decision-making. A conversation may take place At that point, they may look to move them to another area to have a private chat with them. A supervisor may become involved. So there are a number of steps that they would take, but ultimately it's about securing the safety of that passenger, the staff and the other passengers around them.
I don't know about you, Pat, but I can't understand that, Graham. I'm sorry.
I don't understand it either.
What is it like? First of all, let me come at it another way, Graham. Where are these private rooms near the security desks in Dublin Airport? Are they far?
No, they're a few steps away from the security.
And how often are they used?
They'd be used on an hourly, on a daily basis.
Okay, Pat, have you ever been brought into one of these rooms in your travels?
No, as I said to you,
okay. Martin, and we'll get more callers up now. Martin, have you ever been taken into one of these rooms?
Not in an Irish airport, but I have been in the Middle East, Malaysia, and various, you know, far-flung places. The booths are right beside the security area, for instance, in Abu Dhabi. So they do that immediately. There's no question about it that they don't immediately. Mm. The minute I say stoma, they say, just come in here, please, thank you, and I'm gone in a second.
And when you hear the word stoma in Dublin Airport, Graham, what is the protocol?
I think the protocol is very much the same, and I think, you know, I've already gave you the
numbers.
Well, the vast majority of people have a very good experience, Joe, at Dublin Airport.
Oh, I know that. I know.
It's really unfortunate that we do have these few here.
Yeah, but they are real. And I know you'll throw percentages at me and numbers, but you also said the security protocols are the same in all airports. We're hearing different experiences in different airports, but I know you'll put percentages to me. But for these people we're talking to, their experience, their bad experience, was 100%.
Well, I would make the point, Joe, that every airport has its issues. I don't think any airport gets it 100% right all the time. I think Dublin Airport is no different to those airports. Our job is to make sure that we get as close to 100%.
Okay. Well, let's go at it. Of course it is. Let's go at it a different way. How do you communicate with the 900 security staff, rosters, sick leave, maternity, etc., etc.? How do you communicate? Do each one of them get a generic email newsletter that goes out to them every week saying, be careful about this, and we've had an issue with that, or there's a new machine? How do you communicate with the 900 security staff?
Well, they've been done in a number of different ways. There'd be newsletters. Every staff member would have a briefing before they start every shift. They would have a briefing at the end of the shift as well.
Can I come in here?
Martin, yeah.
Joe, yeah. Is it not the fact when staff training commences, whenever I underwent training in my job, we were always handed a booklet. And the booklet should contain, you know, not everyone knows everything in the world about medical complaints and prosthesis and bags and everything.
Okay.
So is there not a booklet or a book where every officer is given, ahead of them being allowed to go public, at least information, then followed up by practical training and supervision, a booklet explaining all the different types of prosthesis that one can get? Some people have double stomas, so, you know, urine stoma and fecal stomas. There's all sorts of variations on what people can have.
Graham, does such a booklet exist in Dublin Airport?
There are lots of booklets and lots of different things. You know, the training that these people would have would be they train for months before they're put in a public environment, and that training is ongoing then from the point that they enter the public floor.
Can I interject, Joe? This is Mary.
Mary's back.
Just with respect to security, I mean, you know, the expectation for us is that security is priority.
Yes.
But realistically, in this case, the humanity is missing, and they are missing a whole piece on the humanity, that people must be treated with respect, and that respect certainly was not given to me, and from listening to your other callers, it certainly wasn't given to them, and that security is prioritised. In other words, these are people who are dealing with a potential threat, and that people with limbs and, you know, all the bits that we have that are unnatural to the human body, but allow us to continue to move and to live. Are not being taken into consideration, and that our feelings and our humanity is not being taken into consideration here. That security prioritises everything, including the ability to be humane.
Okay,
Mary, I would absolutely agree with Graham.
I'm sorry, I'm going to go straight over to Ars Neutron, where Simon Harris is about to receive his seal of office from Uachtaráin na hÉireann Michael D. Higgins.
It's also a deeply personal one, as Heather Humphreys pointed out in her nominating speech for Simon Harris.
That is in the main drawing room in Ars Neutron. That was Andy Lawler on the TV feed. President Higgins President Higgins came in from his office and on a walking aid with the Taoiseach designate behind him and the Secretary General to the President, Orla Hanrahan, together. And there, unfortunately, there's a little Prince Charles moment. The fountain pen has fallen onto the floor. But our President reacts in a much calmer way than Prince Charles did that day above in Hillsborough. And now Simon Harris is officially Taoiseach of Ireland at 12 minutes past two here on this beautiful Tuesday in Dublin. He, by the way, the journey from Leinster House to Ars an Uachtaráin took 13 minutes by my reckoning. And if he had travelled by car, like so many family motorists, it would have been 35 minutes according to Google Earth, but it took 13 minutes. If he'd cycled, it would have taken him only 24 minutes to get to Ars an Uachtaráin. And if the new Taoiseach designate had taken public transport to Ars an Uachtaráin, there's no direct bus, it would have taken him over an hour and 15 minutes. And there he is now receiving his seal of office from the President and Taoiseach Simon Harris. A great moment for him being able to say that. Taoiseach Simon Harris will now leave Ars Neutron, I presume, in the next few minutes, maybe have a cup of tea and a chat.
And there's a seal of office
has been handed to him. And the seal of office, as you know, stays in the Ars. And the next time the Taoiseach Simon Harris will have a seal of office in his hand will be later this evening when he presents, with the President, obviously, the seals of office to his ministers as he appoints them. And then there will be a ceremonial cabinet meeting tonight in Ars Neutron to formally address some issues, and then no doubt celebrations all over Greystones and indeed beyond as the new Taoiseach appoints his cabinet. Okay, Taoiseach Simon Harris is now gone back into the President's private office. We've seen it so many times with his heaving bookshelves and his heaving desk full of papers and books and various other documents, which he's obviously going through a busy, busy office. Okay, that's it. That's it over. Back after this break, we go back to Dublin Airport.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Oh, and we know, of course, that the vast majority of people travelling through Dublin Airport have positive experiences. Okay, there are security issues, the same as every other airport, there are queues. But we've had, and say the least, an interesting number of calls in the last few days about difficult experiences going through Dublin Airport. Graham, is this anything to do with the new machines, the new scanners, the new baggage scanners, the new personnel scanners? Are the machines picking up stuff that they didn't pick up before?
The machines will, because that's the whole point of them, is that they are safer. They can pick up more stuff. So I think there is a massive learning curve going on for the team at the moment. These are new pieces of technology. So there is a bit of learning to be done to make sure that everybody's up to speed and how they work. And look, things happen in the airport. As I say, 60 million departing passengers every year go through. That's around 50,000-60,000 departing passengers on our busiest days. So a lot of things happen. So it's a constant learning curve in the airport.
But you see, what we heard yesterday, Graham, and this is, I accept that point. Everyone does. No need to keep making it about the vast majority of people have a positive experience. The vast majority of people are able-bodied, don't have knee replacements, don't have colonoscopy bags, don't have prostheses. But they are the people who are well able to get through. But what we're hearing is that people who do have colonoscopy bags, do have knee replacements, do have post-mastectomy prosthesis, already you can imagine the stress they might be under. And but they're not finding the experience as positive as everyone else, and they should really, given their difficulties before they even arrive. Catherine, for example, what happened?
I had a similar experience to the lady with MS going through the airport, in that I have an ileostomy bag.
Okay.
And it's difficult enough going through security because you're well aware that if you pass it down, they're going to feel something irregular.
Yeah.
And before even that happens, you know, you say to the security people, you know, very quietly, look, I have a bag. And nine times out of ten, most people, if you say you have a bag, they know exactly what you're talking about. But they are so rude and so lacking in any kind of empathy that they would even... And then they speak out loud, what kind of a bag?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and you say, you know, an ileostomy bag.
But do they, when you say bag, would they think it's a cabin bag?
Well...
Or a shopping bag.
Empty-handed. In fairness, they might, you know, but you say... I've an ileostomy bag, and they pat you down quite, not rough, but certainly not gently, and then they ask to see it. Now,
and have you ever been asked?
I almost lost the plot when that happened, and it was just in the end she could see. At this stage now, I am really distressed, and she said, "Oh, just go on." But to be honest with you, a bit like the lady yesterday, it's not until you get actually sitting down at a coffee and you think, did actually that happen? Now, I've been through some airports that would have incredible security and would be known, and nothing like that. And even going through with a different language. The only airport I can honestly, I don't know whether I can say it or not, but I will, that I've had a similar experience in was Frankfurt. But all other airports, no problem at all.
So what would you say? What would you say to Graham McQueen on behalf of the Dublin Airport Authority?
Well, I would just say to him, they really need to put management on the floor over a period of time randomly and just see what's going on. They should be trained, and there certainly should be a private area where you can be taken if they actually want you to undress and show them your bag.
Graham, is there a sign up anywhere or any indication, be it on ticket or emails or whatever, when you book a ticket? Is there anything saying, please be aware, if any passenger, you don't have to specify the specifics, if any passenger wishes to be patted down or whatever the phrase is in a private room, please indicate this to one of our staff and it will be facilitated?
There are signs which indicate that there are private rooms available. In terms of
Where are those signs? Because I've never seen them.
They're on the approach to security. In terms of individual groups, so we would do a lot of research with particular groups and people with certain kinds of disabilities. Yeah. And actually, the feedback that we get comes up time and time again is that they don't want lots and lots of signage to flag this fact. So we very much take the lead of these groups. We consult with them.
I'm thinking of a generic sign. You don't have to specify if you suffer from or enduring any of the following. You just put up a generic sign. If for any reason you would like, if you're asked to step aside and if you would like to go into a private room, it's the first thing you should be asked, by the way. You should be asked by your staff, do you wish to go into a private room? But given that seems not to be asked, people should be aware that you can request it.
Well, in terms of the signage, as I say, that is done in consultation with groups. In terms of asking for a private screening area or being offered one, that should be happening. I think that's one of the learnings that we'll take away from this. So, you know, hearing about these experiences is very disappointing. Okay. It's hard to listen to, Mary, but I think we can absolutely learn from them.
The most recent newsletter that went to the 900, as you say, a lot of them very new security staff. In your most recent newsletter, do you point out, do you say, just a reminder, a stoma bag is ABC, a mastectomy prosthesis is DFY? You know, does it contain information like that?
Well, it wouldn't necessarily be done by a newsletter, Joe, but it would be done with staff members on an ongoing training basis. A lot of this would be done verbally.
Do you know when the word stoma bag, mastectomy prosthesis, ileostomy, you know, do you know when those words were last used by your supervisors in their briefing sessions?
I would need to check that with them, Joe, but I can guarantee you it would be done regularly as part of ongoing training and upskilling.
Okay. Marion Keely, you're listening to Graham McQueen of Dublin Airport. Go ahead, Marion.
Yes, I had two experiences. Last year I was going through with my son, and both of us have a defibrillator.
Okay.
And they patted my son down, and he had his jumper on, and he was okay.
Yeah.
I had a jumper and had a very, very light T-shirt under it. They wanted me to take off the jumper.
Mm-hmm.
I refused. And I was quite loud about it, not shouting or anything, but just made it perfectly clear that I was not going to strip off in front of anybody. And she kept insisting that I take off the jumper, that I couldn't go through. So I told her to get me somebody in a car.
But did you explain, Marion, sorry, my mistake, if you already said it.
Yeah,
That you had a defibrillator as well?
Yes, and I have a card, a HRI card.
And you produced
that
this?
I give to them. Yeah, all the time. And so I asked her to get me somebody in authority, and he said it was okay. I didn't need to take off my jumper, but my son didn't have to take off anything, wasn't asked to take off anything. And this year,
mm-hmm.
I was going through, and a very similar thing happened. They asked me to take off my jumper. Now, my daughter was with me, and I know she's probably listening now, but she said, "No, Mom, leave it, we're okay." So I took off the jumper because I had a better T-shirt underneath it. Yeah.
And when you took off your jumper, like, what did they see, and what satisfied them? And could it have, by the way, were you offered a private room?
No, I've never been offered a private room in Ireland. I have been offered it in other countries, but not
or a
in
booth,
Ireland.
A private booth or whatever.
No. But that's the first time that happened to me last year. Usually they just pat you down. They're very pleasant. I had no problem with what they were doing. It's just I didn't want to take off the jumper because what I had underneath wasn't. It was very, very light.
And you say you had an ID card with a reference to the issue.
Yes, it's Heart Rhythm Ireland.
Heart Rhythm Ireland. And now, would your photograph have been on that, Marion?
No, but all my details are.
Okay. And you obviously had your passport with you, so
that
has a photograph.
Yeah.
Graham, defibrillators and these for people with cardiomyopathy, obviously they have things implanted in their chest. Is there a protocol for that?
Yeah, there would be. That would be quite a common one going through the airport. So, again, it sounds like we maybe got it wrong on that occasion. I think we do get it right most of the time. I think that's one we can take back.
Okay.
So,
Carol, Joe at RT.ie, 51551. Carol, what happened to you?
Well, I had, hello Joe, I had a knee replacement there, it was nearly 2 years ago. So I was up and down to Dublin quite regular. I'd fly from Kerry up and down. There was never, ever an issue in Kerry. You just went through and they had one of those automatic machines. It was great. But Dublin, every time, be it, you know, coming down all of the time, you'd have to, you were pulled aside continuously, even when it was using your crutch at the time. And you'd say what you had and whatever. And they would always, you were, like the people said, you were pulled aside, it was said out loud, they'd pat you up and down vigorously, like even to one point my knee was...
Come back to me, Carl, your knee was what?
It was still quite sore after the surgery, I wasn't, you know, and they frisked you down or whatever, like, put like really rough on the knee, and I flinched and I said to the girl, please, and she shrugged, didn't really care. And I mean, as that other man said as well, you're stood down to the side, and meanwhile your bag and your wallet and your everything has gone on down the thing ahead of you, you know. And like, no, you couldn't even kind of make a light conversation with them or anything. They are rude. The majority of them are rude, and it was just, you'd get anxious having to go up and down through it, you know.
Margaret is on the line. Margaret, you can put your point to Graeme,
because
in fairness, Graeme said he's taking all this on board and will act. Go ahead, Margaret.
Well, I'd like to think he would, because when I heard the conversation, I said I have to ring, because it's something. I have a colostomy bag with 20 years, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And I have a card to verify that. But you shouldn't be made to feel like you're different to anybody else. And as regards showing people your colostomy bag in public, there's the private rooms, if they're there, I don't know where they are. But as far as I'm concerned, they need their staff trained better. He's saying they regularly do this and regularly do that. That's fine. But if you ask some of them today, if you went into the airport, about a colostomy bag or a stoma bag, I'd hazard a guess at that they couldn't answer you.
How long have you been travelling through Dublin?
I've been through numerous times.
And have you ever been offered a private room when you mentioned that you have a stoma bag?
No.
And overall, because Graham was talking about percentages and, you know, the overall vast percentage of people are happy with Dublin Airport, but the overall vast majority of people can endure waiting and can't.
Well, I'm happy with the airport, Joe. It's just, when it comes to, like, I don't want to class myself as different.
Same
as the next person.
Yes, yes.
But I shouldn't have to publicly take down my clothes and show them. Like, I'm not a security risk. It saved my life. So.
But how often have you been asked to do that, Margaret? In fairness to the.
Twice.
Okay.
I just feel that they need to just up their ante, even if they only got 3 or 4 staff and trained them in. All between colostomies, ileostomies, all of these things. Like, there's one to take over from the other if they need be or whatever. But people need more training in it.
Graeme, do you accept that point? I know you have 900 people to 900 staff. And I know a lot of them, and they're brilliant, a lot of them come on duty at 3-4 o'clock in the morning and can be working to 1-2 o'clock, and different people, obviously. That's how long the day is. So it's different shifts, different rosters. But is there a need? Well, I think you're going to say yes, there is a need for more awareness.
Yeah, look, I think so, Joe. Look, I think we aim to get it right all of the time. We obviously don't. We always look to improve. So I think there's a lot we can take away. But look, that isn't just today. That's every day. We learn about things that happen in the airport that need to be better. I think we take very seriously the independent research we do around customer feedback. We just set up a passenger panel, actually, which is meeting on a quarterly basis with our CEO and the MD at Dublin Airport to listen to different groups, different types of traveller, about how the experience at Dublin Airport can be better. That will include groups, you know, representing people like we're hearing from today. And that's really, really important. We want to get better as an airport.
Well, maybe at the
Graeme, but
yes,
you need,
Marion.
Graeme, you need to actually put the work into the staff that are being trained up. Like, I have a card that verifies what I have. And, like, to have this done to you, it's an invasion of your privacy for starters.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, I just think they need to do that bit more.
And would it help, Graeme, would it help at your end if you were to say, you say you're in contact with all these different organisations, but as the referendums proved there 3 weeks ago, the organisations that are representing certain groups are not always the totality of the representation available. There was disagreement, for example, in one specific referendum about the role of carers, and whether there was a split, to say the least, between carers supporting a carers organisation supporting. But that's my general point. But is there any point in you saying to these organisations like HRI or consultants or whatever, for to have one of these ID cards we need photographic ID as well. Would that help your end, security-wise?
Yeah, look, I'd have to delegate that question to my colleagues. One I can definitely take back to them. I don't know the ins and outs of that, I'll be honest. But look, it's certainly a lot here that we can take back. I know my team are listening into this call at the moment. So there's going to be a lot, you know, we can, for us to look at. As I say, we want to get better as an airport. I think we're in a good place. Can we get better? Absolutely. And I'm confident over the months ahead that we will.
OK, stay with us. joe@rte.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
joe@rte.ie. Graham McQueen is with us from Dublin Airport Authority. Sandra, your experience, please.
Hi. Well, I'm a type 1 diabetic with many years, and I've had an insulin pump now for nearly 14 years, which has been incredible in the improvement of the treatment. But my issue is, like, this insulin pump is attached to me 24 hours of the day.
Okay.
The plastic tube goes from the pump into my stomach, which is attached onto a cannula, just clipped on. And I have been subjected to various different standards by airport staff, usually in Cork Airport, where I fly in and out of. And some will just let you go straight through. Now, I always carry a letter from my consultant saying I'm wearing it and that it can never be detached from my body.
Okay.
Some will just wave you through because there is a little bit of metal in the pump, so it will go off going through the scanner, the body scanner. Some will ask you to detach it, even though it's never supposed to be, and they'll put it through their X-ray scanner. And some will pat you down in public. Others will scan you with a separate scanner.
Mm-hmm.
But I have been asked to actually show some stuff where it has been attached to my body. Now, that's an invasion of anybody's privacy, the same as it is the people with the colonoscopy and ileostomy bags, because, like, you're lifting your clothing. This is directly attached to my skin, so there's absolutely no hope of hiding it discreetly. And you're being asked to lift your clothing. It could be your thighs, it could be your stomach, it could be your back. Invariably then, the whole world and his mother can see your private parts of your body. And it is a demeaning experience. Now, look, I do it. I have never objected.
Okay, okay. Yeah.
Because I know that these people have a job to do security-wise at the end of the day. But a little bit of practical common sense. And unlike the people with the ostomy bags, I'm one of tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands that travel around the world every day with these pumps. Like, these are common treatments in 2024.
And so, Sandra, were you ever offered to be brought into a private room?
Absolutely never. And I'm trying to visualise Cork Airport security now. I haven't flown for a number of years since the pandemic, but visualising Cork Airport, I can't even think where there is a private area. I've never seen it.
Jimmy Dignan, stay with us, Sandra. Jimmy Dignan, two knee replacements. What's your experience, please?
Joe, every time I fly, I wear a pair of shorts because I have two scars down in front of my knees. And, every time the buzzer goes off, I'm asked to step to the side. I get the wand, it goes over my knees, and then I'm patted down automatically. And sometimes then your shoes are swabbed or they're taken off. But look, it all depends on the security guys. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it can be just not so good. But in
and
Dublin,
when did you take to wearing shorts through?
From the first time I had my knee done in 2018. So,
And was that did you happen upon that idea yourself, or somebody said it to you?
No. I just happened upon it myself because it just. You know, I said to myself, if they can see the scars, then they know you're after having knees replacement.
Well, did it help?
But. It does help, you know, and I'm stopped. It's not just in Dublin. I'm stopped in Spain, Portugal, wherever you go, you're stopped. But It's not been all negative, you know what I mean? There is some good security people there. The vast majority.
But it just, it's as Graham keeps saying, this is a learning exercise. I wasn't aware I was aware of some difficulty, but I wasn't aware of the extent of it. And I can judge it by looking at the screens. It's not going to stop the airport, but it's not an insignificant issue that's coming up. Graham, is it this thing about people not being asked into the private room? Is there too much pressure on you from? I know you were fined by the aviation authority. Is there too much pressure on you to get as many people as possible through security to keep those queues? Because if somebody is stopped, somebody has to go into a room. That means one or two people, depending on the gender, has to leave. The actual conveyor belt has to go into that room. Could be 5-10 minutes fixing, looking, asking, reassembling. That means the queues get longer, doesn't it? Is the pressure on the queues too much for you?
No, not at all, Joe. Like, I think the issues we had in terms of those fines you mentioned were at the very start of last year, which was mainly a hangover from COVID. So I wouldn't see the two as the same. In terms of ultimately what the staff member is looking to do is make sure that person mm-hmm. poses no security risk when they go through.
Yeah, but so you are. But I tell you, but Graham, you are being fined a substantial amount by the aviation authority, and one of the calibrations they use is the duration of the security queue. It's not true.
But to be fair, Joe, if the staff member was worried about that alone, they would be ignoring all the other regulations that we have around security. We're regularly looked at very closely to make sure we're complying with all legislation and regulations. So that would be as big, if not bigger, thing mm-hmm. in the staff member's mind when someone is going through. It's absolutely not about getting them through quickly.
Okay, just, and I appreciate your time, Graham. I really do. You're a lesson for other PR people to do their job up front, and hopefully it's a learning process as well. Ger, you want to make a quick point to Graham?
Yeah, I've travelled through Dublin. I have a prosthetic arm, and I've travelled through Dublin numerous amount of times over the last 7 or 8 years.
Yeah, okay.
And I've never experienced anything other maybe than curiosity. Obviously, sometimes you're patted down. Okay. I do sit off an alarm. I have pins in my legs, my arms, my shoulders. And,
okay.
But I invariably sit off a machine. Curiosity, if anything, is the only experience I've had to it. I've never had a negative experience.
And what do you mean, curiosity, Ger? What are you asking?
I have a robotic prosthetic hand, and it's just, how does it work, basically?
Okay. You know?
And I it's not always. You can't always say traveling through Dublin Airport is a pleasant experience, because often you're under pressure and it's rushed and busy. But I've never had any negative experience from any of the staff in Dublin Airport. I've always been more helpful if anything, you know. So.
And how do you answer that question when you're asked? How does your arm work?
I said I move my hand.
And that controls it,
That controls it, yeah. So, yeah.
Okay. Yep. Fair play, Ger. That point is well made. Thanks indeed, Ger.
No,
Audrey has two prosthetics in her knees. Audrey.
Hi, Joe. How are you?
Good, thanks. Go ahead. You want to let Graham hear this, as we do as well.
Well, I go through Dublin Airport. I'm not saying I go through loads of times, but I've been through a couple of times in the past, 8 months. And I have two prostheses in my knees. Now, I go through, I know the procedure. So I walk through the tunnel, the bell rings, I know it's going to ring, and I say to the girls, two new knees.
Okay.
And she just takes me to one side and passes me all the way down. She asks me, put my foot up on a little step. She goes down, checks my trouser legs, and then she might just say, do you mind if I check your waist? And she puts her hand around my trousers inside my jumper, I don't mind. And then she'll say, have you wired your bra? And I always say yes.
Okay.
What I have to say, she'd say, thanks be to God, she said, because you are very compliant. And she said, I wish they were all like you. But I know, Joe, you've got to. That's what they've got to do. That's their job. And I find them excellent.
Okay, that's well said. That's well said and well heard. Audrey, have you ever been asked, do you want to go into a private room?
No, never.
Okay. No. Graham, thanks indeed, Audrey. Graham, what do these private rooms look like? Are they doors or booths or curtains or...?
Depends on the terminal. They're not dissimilar to something you would find in a clothes shop around, you know, a changing room, something like that. So very safe, very secure.
And you're clear. Anyone can ask. If they're asked to step aside, they can ask, "Can I be brought into that?" Can I sort out my luggage? But can I be brought into a private room?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that's the one of the takeaways there from your last caller is that, you know, speak to the staff that's there, speak to the individuals, ask for help. They're there to help you get through. They're there to make sure that the airport is safe, the other passengers are safe. But talk to the staff, explain your situation, and hopefully we can give you a good experience.
Okay, and just remind as well that everyone that travels through Dublin Airport is paying a fee to Dublin Airport for security. So don't be afraid to ask. Graham McQueen, I do appreciate your time. I sincerely do. And I hope this is a learning experience for everyone involved. That's Graham McQueen, Media Relations Manager, Dublin Airport Authority. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And Joe at RT.ie. Mary Hart, it's an experience. Now, it is a number of years ago. Go ahead, Mary.
Yes, it's quite a while, unlike the other people on the programme. About 33 years ago, to be exact, I was going through an airport and
it wasn't an airport in the Republic. Yeah, but go ahead, Mary. Yeah. What happened?
So I was obviously pregnant and I was a frequent flyer, so I used to carry paperwork with me. I was over and back to London. And I wouldn't go through the security, the infrared structure, and I would just show the security people that, and they would just say that's okay. But this particular occasion, I was walking through, and the next thing, the two female security officers came down to me and said, "Could you come with us?" Mm-hmm. And I just, one on either side of me, and they walked me right through the airport. And I even think of it now. I don't know how I managed. I was on my own, and they took me into a porta cabin in the centre of the terminal building. And I said, "What am I doing here?" And they said, "Oh, we want to make sure that you're carrying a baby."
Oh,
and I said, "Well, all you had to do was ask me, and I have the paperwork with me." And they said, "Well, we need to know." And so I had to lift up my blouse to show that my stomach was expanded. And, you know, and like the other ladies, you know, I was on the plane and began to cry, and I thought, how did this happen to me? And I'm, you know, I'm a well-toughened journalist who would take on the best of them, and I didn't take them on. And when I did get to, you know, my workplace in London, they were aghast, and they said, "You need to do something more about this." Okay. But I didn't. But to this day, it's 33 years later, and the baby is a strapping son in Dublin now. Okay. But it still bothers me. And Dublin Airport and any other airport security to know that when these things happen to a person, it's a personal affliction on you, and you can carry it with you, and it shouldn't happen. Okay. It just shouldn't happen.
Okay, well said, Mary, and well put, and glad to hear you've a 33-year-old.
Dara's a good rugby player at Wanderers in Dublin.
Oh, well done. Okay, thanks, Anita. That's Mary Hart. Mary Duffy, again, but this happened in Dublin, Mary, but not with Dublin Airport Authority staff. What happened?
Well, I arrived at the airport, Joe, and I discovered my ATM card wouldn't work, and I had to ring my bank, and because I couldn't leave for America, for New York, without any money.
Yeah.
And as a result, I just totally forgot about the immigration clearance on this side.
Okay.
So I was horrified when I remembered, and a very nice member of the staff at Dublin Airport offered to take me through.
Okay.
And to put me at the top, otherwise I would have missed my flight. And I'd say there was 300 people in the area at the time.
Okay.
And I walked up, and I'm not very tall, I'm 5 feet tall. And when my eyes seemed level with the counter, and the immigration officials seemed to be up like an umpire, at a game, very high up. And she said, "Place your right index finger in the machine, you know, the..." Mm. And I said, "I don't have any fingers." And she said, And she just wasn't getting it, you know. And the woman who was helping me from the staff in Dublin Airport said, hug her, you know, said to her, will you cop on, you know, have a look. She still wasn't getting it. So I stood back about 8 feet so that she could see all of me.
Yeah.
And she eventually understood that I've no arms. Mm-hmm. And then she shouted, who's with her? Who's in charge? And she just refused point blank that I could actually be travelling to America by myself, you know. But I tell you, I've had so many experiences in airports that's put me off airports altogether. And now I much prefer to go by ferry when I can.
And Mary, how did that particular issue or scene resolve itself that day? I presume the woman, the operative, realised that she was out of order.
No, she didn't.
Okay.
No. I mean, it's kind of interesting because I run into this quite a lot. I would have thought, and I fully empathise with your previous callers, but I would have thought that, you know, they all have hidden impairments, but mine would be very obvious.
Yes.
But apparently people tell me all the time I don't look like I've no arms, whatever that means.
And Mary, have you ever been called out like that in other settings, if you follow me?
Well, I was travelling to New York then, again, in January, well, a long time ago, but shortly after Pan Am Flight 103 went down over Lockerbie.
Yes,
And I walked into the airport again by myself early in the morning. And I went to make a phone call to tell my sister I had arrived. And I was pounced on by security in the middle of the floor. And the whole effort seemed to be that I was a vulnerable person and easily duped. And I was obviously going to carry a bomb or something, you know.
And who pounced on you, Mary?
Airport security. It was in Heathrow and it was... there was a lot of tension because it wasn't long after
Lockerbie, so it was around Christmas.
There was a lot of tension, but the whole assumption, like I kept saying to them, you know, I want to cooperate, I'm trying to help, you know, but can you stop treating me like a moron, you know? Like they went through my file of facts and discovered addresses in Algeria and you'd swear they won the lotto. They thought that they got somebody, you know. Because I travelled a lot in North Africa, and
but I'm still baffled as to why they pounced on you. What justification did they give?
They didn't have to give any.
I know that security.
Look, if somebody, I present as somebody who's vulnerable, who's easily duped by. Well, I think the implication at the time was that I had a romantic involvement with. Somebody and they would have you know,
but they weren't looking for your face on a screen when you came in and someone said there she is. You're saying it was my behavior.
It was that I was traveling by myself, that I went straight to the phone. That seemed to, you know, but they took me in the middle of the floor and had me there for 2.5 hours in the middle of the floor. But
I'm just wondering, you know that line you use when the operative at Dublin Airport, when she realised you don't have full arms in that sense, and when she shouted, ignoring you, thinking that anyone with a physical disability also has an intellectual or mental disability, who's with her? Was it one of those moments that they presumed, because you look different, intellectually or mentally, you might have been vulnerable?
Yeah, I really don't know.
Yeah.
She was very rude.
It's
and
horrific.
She was very...
No, but the 2.5 hour thing is horrific. Absolutely horrific.
Well, I used to travel a lot to Scotland.
Yeah.
I used to go through Belfast a lot.
Okay.
And I would come, you know, I would walk through the city. I can't remember why. Something to do with the ferry or changing. And they would say, put your arms up, please.
Mm.
And I would say, I don't have any.
Yeah.
And they would either take that on face value and deal with me normally, or if they became embarrassed by what had encountered, I mean, well, sorry.
Okay.
They would often say, we'll take you down to the station and sort you out there, you know, because they thought I was talking about revolvers. Do you know what I mean?
No arms, yeah, okay.
But
okay,
they
Mary.
They didn't handle it very well.
Okay, it's good to hear you again, Mary.
All right.
And
thank
that's
you, Joe.
That's Mary Duffy, well-known campaigner and well-known. She was in RT for a long number of years. Great creative in here and creative outside as well. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Don, good afternoon. You had a positive, as a lot of people have, but you had a positive experience in Dublin Airport. You want to make that point. Please do.
Good afternoon, Joe. Yes, my situation goes back to early 2015. I had a pretty large attack, if you like, on my medical well-being in December when I got a burst bowel and a burst appendix at the same time. Nice. I pulled through, obviously, and did well, thanks to Beaumont, the surgeon there. But it meant I was wearing the colostomy bag, so the company I was doing work with was an airline, and I had to travel to where they were. They were very good to me as well. So going through Dublin Airport, and as I left Beaumont, they gave me a document filled out in about eight languages that you could fit in your pocket. You had the little document in your pocket, you wore the colostomy bag, and the first time I was going through security, I was a bit nervous, but I handed over the document, and they took one look, and I said, oh, that's fine, on you go.
Okay.
I went through, but as I was going through, and this is the probably the bit I wanted to make, the staff were fine, but as I was going through, I knew I was going to have a problem with my colostomy bag being too full, as can happen with these things.
Yeah.
I dashed off down to the toilet area for what I'm just going to call it for disability. It's probably the wrong phrase now, but it's a different type of toilet. It's bigger. It was so well equipped. Everything was so clean. I was able to clean myself up. I had to take my shirt off, wash the shirt in the basin, dispose of the bag, put on a new bag, and just people do that with a colostomy bag.
Yeah.
But really what I wanted to say is the cleaning staff have done a fantastic job.
Great.
And every time I go through the airport, I say to any of the cleaning staff how much it meant to me at that moment to have everything working, clean, available, and just in and out in 20 minutes or so and get down to what was my flight at the gate for 7:25 in the morning. Because those kind of things were wonderful to have when you have a bit of an issue over something like that.
Yeah, I
can't say there was any issue one way or another with the security staff. I didn't have any issue with other airports either. But when you're in a bit of a mess, you kind of need everyone to work. And that's what happened. So I want to just thank the cleaning staff for doing that today.
And that's again, education for all of us, Don. Appreciate. George Garnett. George, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
What happened to Dublin Airport? Again, positive. Go ahead, George.
Yes, I have a pacemaker and a hip replacement. When I go to Dublin Airport, I put all my stuff into the basket, make sure that I don't have, take off my watch, a wrist bracelet that I have, declaring that I'm a diabetic, and then declare to the security guard that I have a pacemaker.
Okay.
Every time he tells me, don't go through the x-ray machine, come around the side of the machine, warms me down outside, pats me down, and everything is okay. I've never had a problem. And last year, I was going to Frankfurt with a friend of mine. He brought me up to the queue, which there was hundreds of people. Called one of the security people, told him that I was in my 80s, couldn't stand around.
Okay.
The guy lifted the tape, brought me all around through the queue and right up to the security. Passed me through again. Didn't have to go through the machine, around the side, wandered me down, and everything was grand.
Okay.
So I have never had a problem.
Great, great.
Going through.
How long have you had a pacemaker, George?
Oh, 15 years.
And do you have to have that replaced on a regular basis? Or
I've had it replaced once every 10 years,
Every 10 years?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
They regularly... I go to Beaumont regularly and then they test it, see how long the battery life is and is it working properly.
Okay.
And then last year they just said... You need a replacement.
Okay.
So I had a replacement just before Christmas.
Well, it is working properly, obviously. Well done.
Oh, it
well
is
done.
Working properly.
Well done to the
yeah,
medical grand. Staff in Beaumont. Okay, George, can I go to Mila Mockett on sound? Ashton Grufferty, broadcast coordinator Shane Galvin, producer Tara Lockery Grant, and Ray Darcy is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Elevate your bedroom with our fresh new bedding designs and colours, in store and online at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe at rte.ie.